Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk.
The Second Amendment, from the day it was passed, limited the type of people who could own a gun and what type of weapon you could own. You couldn't buy a cannon. Those who say the blood of patriots, you know, and all the stuff about how we're going to have to move against the government. Well, the Tree of Liberty is not water with the blood of patriots. What's happened is that there have never been, if you wanted to think you need to have weapons to take on the government, you need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapons. The point is that there's always been the ability to limit, rationally limit, the type of weapon that can be owned and who can own it.
What? Wait a minute. Did I hear that correctly?
You need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapon. You need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapon. You need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapon.
Yeah, I guess I did hear that correctly. I it was one thing when Swalwell said it 2 years ago. We all thought he was just an idiot guy running for office. But the president of the United States just threatened us that if we, and by the way, we're going to talk about this quite a bit today, because he not only threatened us, but he did a bunch of lies too. Things about what gun, you know, you couldn't buy a cannon. He said, "Well, actually, you could buy a cannon." And you know what? Back then, the militia that they were encouraging, because they knew that the right to keep and bear arms being necessary to the well-being of the state, okay, was important to have well-armed people. And quite frequently, the individuals, the civilians in the militia, they actually owned better firearms than the government did, because there really wasn't a standing army at that point. It is just amazing what we get into. So we're going to talk about that today in great detail. I'll encourage people to call and talk about their thoughts on that. Let's see. I think we're going to have, this is a promo for a later show. I think that on Ed's and Pastor Rick's show, they're going to be discussing how to build an ark with all the rain we've had and that we're going to have for the next 7 days. They'll probably get into plans and details and techniques and stuff on building an ark. So I'm just kidding. You guys don't have to do that. So let's see. We'll go on, and we have got the normal stuff. Let's see, the gun shows for today. We actually have one out in today and tomorrow. Jackson Gun and Knife Show at the American One Credit Union Event Center in Jackson, and the Livonia Militaria Gun Show at the Livonia Elks. Ohio has the Shelby County Gun and Knife Show and the Dayton Gun and Knife Show. Missouri has the St. Genevieve County Gun Show, and even New York has one, not today, but tomorrow, the Alexander Gun Show at the Alexander Firearms Recreational Hall in Alexander, New York. So, we actually have some gun shows in all four states. Now, I do know that we have listeners in other states, okay? But these are guys that have called or contact me on the emails and stuff, so I always do a shout-out to them. By next week, we'll have new numbers for CPLs. We're holding for 751,102 right now. And I wanted to mention something. I'm going to have to look into this. You could check it at TCSL.org, that's Tri-County Sportsman's League, but just it happens to be that, like, something we were talking about last week, we had, Joe from Tecumseh called, and we talked about, John from Danville had mentioned about the sighting in of his M1, and Tri-County Sportsman's League next week on Saturday, July 3rd, is having a sight-in workshop for the M1, M1A, and M14. What a coincidence, okay? So that's kind of cool. And the course is free to members. Now, I don't know, but I got a feeling. Now, Dave Vandermark runs this stuff for the rifle group and the military shoots and stuff out there. And, you know, I think if you go to the or call to the company, actually send me, if you're interested in going and you're not a club member at Tri-County Sportsman's League, send me an email at dick@triggertalkradio.com, and I'll see if there is any way that a non-member can attend. And it might be a way to get exposed to the club and be interested in it. This is the kind of thing that now, by the way, if you're a member of a club, not just Tri-County, but, you know, Washington Sportsmen's, Howell Gun, Chelsea Rod and Gun, these are the kind of things that the gun clubs do. They have social events and things, but they also have specific lessons and workshops. And in this one, what they're going to do is in the classroom, it's two portions, a classroom portion and a range portion. You'll have an introduction to the site. Now you think, gee, what's so special about that? Well, there's different kinds of sites. There's the M1 site, the M14 site, there's the National Match site, and they all have little things different to it. So you'll learn about how to zero and your ammunition selection, the center of mass hold versus 6 o'clock hold, procedure to adjust your sights to mechanical zero, and a procedure to initially calibrate the elevation drum to 200 yards. Wow, what cool things. Then you'll go out to the range and you'll be doing live fire on a 100-yard range, and you're zeroing the rear sight for elevation, you're zeroing the front sight for windage, and you're setting the rear sight deviation drum for a presumed 200 zero. That is going to be cool. So anyway, you can send me a email and I'll check with Dave and see if you're interested in that, how you might be able to register, okay? Let's see. Winchester is recalling certain lots of 115-grain 9mm ammunition. This is a public service announcement that they put out. They apparently... they actually, if you go to the Winchester website, I'll give you a phone number you can call. If you have, they've got Winchester White Box, Winchester Red Box. Their Olin Winchester LLC is recalling the following lots of 9mm, 115 grain and a full metal jacket and 115 grain jacketed hollow point ammunition. Now, fortunately, it's been hard to get ammunition, but if you did get some, they've got some now. And I will put this up on my website, the actual information and the lot numbers and stuff, it shows how to get it. The issue is that certain ammunition may contain a propellant that does not properly ignite and burn when the cartridge is fired. You think, oh, well, I'll know when that happens. But if it happens, what can happen is that you can get a bullet lodged in your barrel. Okay, the projectile doesn't exit the barrel. And then when you fire a subsequent bullet, you could have the bore obstruction that could cause firearm damage or could cause personal injury. So at any rate, there's a number. If you want to check the lots or if you want to call, they immediately discontinue use. The toll-free number is 844-653-8358. And they'll not only, what they'll do is they will have a free UPS pickup. They'll come to your house and they'll pick it up from UPS, and Winchester will ship you replacement ammunition directly to you. Okay? So, or issue a reimbursement check, but I think it's more important to have the ammunition. So, okay. So I started out the show with the bit about Biden's gun control speech. And we got to say, there was a lot of things that went on this past week or so. And he's been puffing out his chest about gun control, but he actually went off script. And by the way, it's interesting that when they released the official the official transcript, they did not include some of the things that he said, especially the way he bumbled it. I want to say his let's see, Biden had one real goal in Wednesday's speech, announcing a 5-point plan to address rising violent crime in American cities and to reassure voters that Democrats have a strategy that'll reduce the increasing lawlessness and reverse the spike in crime that began last year. Well, wait a minute. You wouldn't be targeting legal gun owners. In that case, you'd be targeting gangs and thugs and defund the police and Black Lives Matter and all the kind of things like that. But instead, the big takeaway from this was a rambling, semi-coherent speech with remarks on his off-topic warning to Americans that if they want to take on the government, they'll need F-15s and nuclear weapons. Can you imagine that, a sitting president saying that? Okay. And by the way, Joe, you know, F-15s are so like 20 years ago, okay? We're way up into the F-22s and F-35s, and actually F-18s are the carrier of the load these days. There's still some F-15s out there, but they those are 1987 airplanes, okay? So you couldn't even get your era right, okay? Well, we know he kind of lives in the past there. But the point is that a sitting president actually got up and he turned what could have been a speech focusing on violent crime and could have talked about defund the police, could have talked about using, like they've allowed, COVID funds to be able to help bolster police departments and stuff. Oh, but he can't do that because then... Oh, but the Democrats, they're so anti-police, you know, defund the police. And we got to have, imagine a new community policing organization that is kinder and gentler and made up of social workers and things like that is going to do a whole lot. But instead, he talks about nukes. Actually, I got a kick because I get quite a bit of emails from armories and different places that I have purchased ammunition and stuff. There's one called Clark Armory that I think I had bought some 44 mag from them when I needed some for hunting and couldn't find it in the stores. Okay. And Clark Armory sent out a sales flyer email this just yesterday. I got it. And it said, all out of nukes and F-15s. So free shipping all weekend. Oh, yeah, everybody's having fun with this, okay? And then, you know, he's not even willing to acknowledge that the Second Amendment has anything to do with self-defense. He, remember the speech, no one needs to have a weapon that can fire 30, 40, 50, or even up to 100 rounds unless you think the deer are wearing Kevlar vests or something. And then he thought he was so clever he repeated it. Like I said before, what do you think, the deer are wearing Kevlar vests? Well, guess what I started getting, okay? he said he talked to most responsible gun owners and hunters, and they'll tell you there's no possible justification for having 100 rounds in a weapon. What do you think? The deer are wearing Kevlar vests? Well, I have got all sorts of memes that have come to me of deer out in the woods, out in the fields, wearing Kevlar vests now. Yeah, I know. There's so many. It's so much fun. Let's see. By the way, it's interesting, the memes that you come up with. One of them said that, you know, here's Joe going, you'll never beat the government with just guns. You'll need F-15s and nukes, says the party that believes the government was almost toppled by an unarmed mob on January 6th. Well, yeah, those two don't kind of go together. I mean, now the whole January 6th thing is being blown out of proportion with the fact that, and by the way, if they got into a real investigation into it, you would see that there were a lot of people that were plants in there. And I'm not making this up because you'll see the pictures of them that these are people that were BLM, people that were Antifa, people that were other protesters and stuff like that, that were dressed in MAGA stuff and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you know what? I don't know if maybe a real investigation would have, but, you know, you can't count on that being real. So the thing is they're claiming that an unarmed mob. And by the way, the only arms there were the government and police, the Capitol Police ones, who actually shot the woman veteran. So they believe that the unarmed mob on January 6th almost toppled the government. But they claim that, if you're going to go against the government with just your guns, you'll need F-15s and nukes. Amazing. Okay. Let's see. Sorry, Joe, but the Second Amendment does not limit the kinds of guns that Americans own. And that is very true. The text of the Second Amendment is short. It says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. University of Tennessee law professor Glenn Harlan Reynolds said the amendment's few words speak for themselves. The Second Amendment places no limits on individual ownership of cannon or any other arms. Okay, there have been many court cases to resolve whether the amendment confers an individual right to bear arms. In 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it does. From the way Biden put it, the Second Amendment regulated arms from the beginning. The more immediate driver in 1787 was the desire to keep the federal government in check, not to limit arms on people. The framers of the Constitution agreed that a federal government might need a standing army. But coming out from under one despot, they wanted to avoid creating another. This was something that the Federalists and Anti-Federalists could agree on, wrote Valparaiso law professor Dave Vandercoy. Both believed the greatest danger to the new republic was tyrannical government, and that the ultimate check on tyranny was an armed populace. Very interesting. Okay. And by the way, there was a very interesting article called Dangerous Threatening Rhetoric is the Tactic of Tyrants. So I'm going to read this. This is Teresa Inacker, who is a contributing writer to The Truth About Guns. And I'm going to read this in its entirety because I thought it was pretty good. It only takes a few minutes, but it is very interesting on how it put into context the fact that the president was threatening the armed populace with F-15s and nuclear weapons, okay? Only tyrants threaten the use of force against their own people. On Wednesday, President Biden remarked, if you wanted or if you think you need to have weapons to take on the government, you need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapons. This is reminiscent of California's infamous Chinese spy betting Congressman Eric Swalwell's threat via Twitter back in 2018 when he said about a hypothetical war against gun owners, and it would be a short war, my friend, the government has nukes. Both references to nuclear weapons are designed to do one thing, and that's to intimidate America's armed populace. Drilling down, the core question is, why do these politicians distrust people with arms the Constitution guarantees that their right to keep and bear? What are they doing or planning? That makes civilian disarmament a priority. If civilian gun ownership isn't a threat, why are the lawful gun owners constantly conflated with criminals, scapegoated for crimes they didn't commit, and their rights are incessantly under incremental attack? The reason is the power of an armed civilian populace is not to be underestimated, and they know it. All men have the potential to be tyrants, as Aristotle warned. The three aims of a tyrant are: one, the humiliation of his subjects. He knows that a mean-spirited man will not conspire against anybody. Two, the creation of mistrust among them. For a tyrant is not to be overthrown until men begin to have confidence in another. And this is the reason why tyrants are at war with the good. They are under the idea that their power is endangered by them, not only because they are not to be ruled despotically, but also because they are too loyal to one another and to other men and do not inform against one another or against other men. And three, The tyrant desires that his subjects shall be incapable of action, for no one attempts what is impossible, and they will not attempt to overthrow a tyranny if they are powerless. Wednesday's speech was a prime example of attempts to humiliate, foment mistrust, and lay the foundations for plans to render popular action ineffective, just as Aristotle described. Biden's ham-handed remarks about the government's arsenal of F-15s and nuclear weapons were intended to mock and humiliate anyone who believes she is a free citizen, not a subject. Anyone believes her life, and this was written by a woman, anyone who believes her life is worth defending against those who wish to harm her, and anyone who subscribes to the historic values enshrined in the Constitution. Very interesting, huh? Aristotle wrote that. And by the way, I guess things don't change very much, okay? I think that I would like to hear what people thought about that. If you, I was torn between Joe going off script and thinking, you know, here he is ham-handedly, you know, bumbling along, and he got the quotes wrong, and then he goes in, and you know the stuff about, you know, they didn't write. They didn't talk about the blood of patriots and all the stuff. Okay, he does that all the, you know, the stuff like about God and country and all that kind of stuff. Okay, I'd like to know what people thought about what when they heard that. Okay, let's see. I also by the way, it is indeed true that. It wasn't until the 1930s or so that people actually thought about gun control, with the Gun Control Acts of 1934 that got into the discussions about sawed-off shotguns and stuff like that. And then in 1968, gun control with the National Firearms Act and things like that. So back then, for years and years, people just assumed that the right to keep and bear arms meant the right to keep and bear arms. They didn't think that it meant, oh, well, you can't have 17 rounds in a pistol. You can only have 15 or 10. 10 would be better, because 15 would be too many, and 17 would be way too many in that Glock 17 there. So I just want to say there's a there were so many untruths in his speech that we tend to maybe make fun of him. But, you know, the thing is that there are a lot of people who sat there and were intimidated by that. People who were who agree with it, that, oh, yep, absolutely. They totally limit what you can't buy a cannon. Well, yeah, you can, you know. And by the way, you can have machine guns. Yes, you have to jump through some hoops, but you can have them. Okay. Suppressors, yep, jump through hoops, but you can have them. You know, when he says that from day one, the Second Amendment could limit who had guns and what they could have, he's totally wrong. Okay, remember that. Let's see. I want to talk about learning the four key handgun and fundamentals of shooting. We'll talk about that today a little bit, because we do need to talk about guns a little bit, just not politics. I got so into reading all the political stuff the last couple of days that I do not have quite as many stories that are totally gun-related, but I'm happy to talk about them and talk about what, you know, some fundamentals, because we do have people who have just found the show, who are just part of that group of 8 million first-time gun owners that bought guns in the past year, and they need to understand some of the training. Maybe just now that we just this week got all of our COVID restrictions lifted, people are venturing back out to gun ranges again, or to gun clubs, or to gun stores and stuff. So we can talk about things that are related to fundamentals. And when we're talking about handguns, there's four very important ones. We'll talk about that when I get back. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And I was just listening to the moment of on sports there, and I was talking with Derek before the show, and he has got a great show planned for tomorrow. Derek, what is what is your plan for tomorrow?
On tomorrow's program, I'm going to celebrate the 45th anniversary of Detroit Tigers starting pitcher Mark the Bird Fidrich's complete game win over the New York Yankees on ABC's Monday Night Baseball. That took place on June 28, 1976. And for those of you who don't remember, Fidrich was named the 1976 American League Rookie of the Year, the greatest, what I call, one-hit wonder in Detroit sports history.
So that's going to be pretty cool. And Derek does all sorts of good shows that are related to sports history and his favorite people in sports history. I mean, he's like a one-track sports history guy. And so he actually found the actual game and got to watch it again, right?
Yeah, I found the game audio and the video on YouTube. And yeah, it was pretty good audio there. And Bob Uecker, famous baseball broadcaster, he was a play-by-play announcer for that game back in 1976, and he's pretty funny with his humor sometimes, so that should provide some comedic relief throughout the program.
And this is not something that you actually got to watch live, because I don't think you were around yet at that time, were you?
No, that was 5 years before I was born. So yeah, unfortunately, I did not get to experience Fidrichomania, or whatever it was called, Birdomania, I think is what it was called back in 1976, when every time he was in Tiger Stadium, it was sold out. That was the game that all Tigers fans went to see that year.
Yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, yeah, I do remember Fidrich, and I was dating somebody from Michigan. Lived in Indiana in 76, but I moved up here in 77, and I just remember all of the Fidrich mania that was going on. So it was a lot of fun. So let's see. So I was going to talk about some things here that are related to handgun fundamentals, because there are so many new handgun owners out there, gun owners in general, 8 million. Now, I don't know the total breakdown of between, you know, how many of those people were getting a 22 or an AR-15 or a shotgun or a handgun. And by the way, there were, you know, 28 million guns, NICS checks and things like that last year. So there were 20 million plus guns sold, and 8 million of them were for new gun owners. But the thing is that many of them, in the middle of the pandemic, they got the gun, and it's like, okay, now what? Okay, so let's talk about some of the handgun fundamentals, okay? And there are things that you may not be thinking about. Okay, because there are many factors that go into shooting a handgun well. Okay, there's the grip, the aim, the sight alignment, trigger control, and all that kind of stuff. But you know what really kind of sets the tone for all of it is your stance. Okay, this is the first thing that we are teaching people when we start out with a lesson. And the fact, besides the gun safety things about not pointing a gun at anybody and or anything you don't intend to destroy, make sure that you treat all guns as if they're loaded at all times, things like that, okay? Yes, the safety items. But when it comes to starting the fundamentals, the number one thing is the stance. And a lot of people are, when they are talking or pick up a gun, and they will, I want to say it's funny because they almost hold, you know, they'll have their feet together. Okay. They will hold the gun so far out in front of them, and they lean back because it's like they're afraid of the gun. And you can't do that like that. You have to stand with your feet about shoulder width apart. You have your legs bent a little bit. You can have the gun in one of maybe two stances. One is called the isosceles, and one's called the weaver. But I'm going to take a call. We've got Fred from Livonia is on the phone with a question about an X10 Elite. Hi, Fred. How are you?
Well, Dick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. What's your question?
Well, I had written to you earlier this week. I don't know if you read the email I sent you or not about the X10 Elite, but my newbie daughter found this online and actually purchased it because of the ammo shortage. What it is a little Bluetooth device that goes onto the rail of a pistol and connects to an application on your phone or iPad or something of that nature, and tracks your dry fire it, and it tracks your shooting capabilities, has all kinds of different challenges you can do with it, quick draw from a holster, all kinds of things like that. My question is, if you excessively dry fire a pistol, like we're talking, 500 rounds, because that's what I did with my SIG 220, is this going to damage or hurt my pistol, number one? And number two, what do you think of the Mantis X10 Elite?
Well, let me tell you, I did see your note last night, because you also asked about snap caps, right?
Correct.
Yes. And I did not have a chance to get into it before today's show. But I can tell you this. There are so many neat training aids. I will look into the X10, but I can tell you this. There are so many neat training aids that have come out to help people since the ammunition shortage has been so bad out there, that as long as they are not encouraging bad habits, then I'm okay with them. Now, I'm going to look at the X10 Elite. I did not get a chance to do that before today's show, so I'll talk about that next week, okay? But I can tell you that to your base question about dry firing, it depends on the gun. And it depends especially on the vintage of the gun, okay? And it is, there are older guns that do not take well to dry firing, okay? They are, there are ones that, I want to say, like some of the old revolvers that had a firing pin that was on the actual hammer itself. There's times when the excessive dry firing, and I want to say, the dry firing it something a few times for getting better trigger feel and stuff like that is not a big deal. But you can totally eliminate any issue with dry firing by using snap caps, because what happens is the snap cap, it emulates a complete round, like a cartridge. Some of them are plastic. Some of them are actually like brass with a spring-loaded primer area in it that cushions the firing pin. But if you don't use one of those on one of the older guns, a lot of times the hammer itself is hitting against like a breech, and it can actually cause some stress issues, some flattening of the metal, some peening of the metal, and can cause some fractures on firing pins. I know that to be true. There's some that, some semi-automatics that are like that as well, because what happened was the design of the firing pin was that the firing pin was going to hit a primer, so it had shoulders on it and stuff that were never intended to hit any of the breech areas around there. But if you fired it without a round in there, it would allow it to the firing pin to over-travel some, and it would cause the ends of the firing pins to break off, okay? Uh-huh. Those were like on CZ-52s and some others like that that they tell you right off the bat, do not dry fire these things. Nowadays, more modern guns are designed to be able to dry fire. Revolvers that use link that instead of having a spiky like firing pin on the revolver hammer, it hits a transfer bar that hits a firing pin. Those generally, like the new Rugers and the new Smith & Wessons and Tauruses and stuff, those are okay to dry fire. You can always, though, use a snap cap, and it will always be better than not having one, okay? So whether it's the little orange polymer ones or the ones that are, I forget the company, but they might be actually called Snap Cap Company or whatever, but they are like a red polymer that has a brass cartridge base and a spring and a primer area that actually cushions the firing pin. Does that help any?
Yeah, that sounds good. When you say old, how about anything from 2000 on? Is that considered new or older?
I'd consider that newer. I'm talking like revolvers from the 50s and 40s and stuff like that.
Okay, so my Colt Police Positive then would be something I wouldn't want to dry fire.
That's right. I have a couple of Colt Police Positives, and they have, you know, like I said, the spike of the firing pins right on the hammer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And that's not one that you would want to do.
Okay, I gotcha.
Okay, now I will look up that Elite X10 because I followed some of the ones that, and actually early ones, there were laser light ones like 10 years ago and stuff that had limitations on things like, it was kind of unrealistic the way you had to cock the gun and stuff like that each time. You couldn't really practice. But something like some of these newer ones that are working in conjunction with your smartphones and stuff like that are pretty cool, and they can sense the click of the gun. I mean, they're that sensitive.
Okay. Uh-huh. Good.
Very good. Well, thanks for the call. Good call.
Thank you so much, Dick. Have a good one.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
Bye. So, yeah, see, I do get lots of fun emails, and sometimes I get them too late to be able to do the research before. We got Tom from Detroit on the phone about dry firing. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Yeah, I was just going to add something real quick. Never dry fire a .22. Car's a notch, and you know, because it's a rim fire, and I know people have learned the hard way. And then after a while, it just won't fire around because it has to pinch the rim.
Flattening. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, like, if you got one of those little, your Ruger, I know that I've been wondering about those LCP 22s. Those sound like they're pretty interesting. You know, the 380s shoot pretty good, but they buck pretty good if you want to practice.
Yep. Yep.
Now, I guess you're 22. I guess you could put an empty shell in there, and I guess that you could dry fire. I don't know. I don't know how many times you could go on one without rotating it, but it would
I wonder if there. That's an interesting. I'm going to write that down. I wonder if there's any snap cap type of things for 22s that are like polymer.
Yeah, unless I don't know. I guess a manufacturer could design it to be able to dry fire, but I don't expect they would. It seems like it would be a lot of expense. They want to get a good pinch on there, so you would think it would at least make contact, with the inside of the chamber.
Yeah, because there isn't any relief around the head, and that flat firing pin, actually some of them are rounded but the flat firing pin would hit and technically probably hit the edge of the chamber and start flattening or peening itself, right?
Well, two of them I know of, it carved a notch right in that, in that counter bore where the rim, where the cartridge headspace is on the rim.
Yep.
And then when it carves a notch on there, it goes ahead and it hits the it's a shell, casing, but it doesn't pinch the rim enough to set off the primer because the primer is inside of the rim, around the whole rim, and basically that's what fires the primer, is pinching that rim tight.
Yep. I do think that Yeah, that would take quite a bit, but you could actually put a little relief into where the rim would deform into it instead of pinching. And then, you know, we have enough issues with 22 primer material that you want every advantage you can. So you need a good crimp. So
Yeah, and then I guess a good mushroom, the firing pin at the same time. But yeah, I just thought I'd throw that in. Hey, there's one other thing. Did you hear about that guy in Colorado that he shot a gunman who just killed a police officer?
Yes.
And what happened was he picked up the guy, the perp, he picked up the guy's rifle. It was an AR-15, and the policeman's partner came around the corner and saw him with the AR-15 in his hand and shot him dead. And now the police and everything are saying, you know, the guy was a hero and it was an accident. And it was.
Yeah, I think his name was like Breezley or something. And yeah, it was out in Denver area. And it's one of those things that the guy, you know, he stepped in to assist the situation. He was a legally armed citizen. And again, you got to remember this. So it's just like we talked about last week where the guy was trying to do the right thing and ended up getting killed. Well, in this case, this guy did the right thing, but you got to remember the after action, okay? And that is somebody's going to come across you and you are going to be, if you picked up that AR-15, which is what this guy did, somebody's going to mistake you for being the gunman, right?
And police, they don't have any time to think. I mean, you know, you're in a gun battle. You can't, you know, wave a white flag and say, wait a minute.
Yep. Yeah. I know that's actually a very interesting scenario when there's training that law enforcement officers take, but there's also training that is provided to politicians and other people, especially to people that are very critical of police. And it's a shoot or no shoot scenario where they have like a video set up and, you know, somebody's coming out of a car or something and you've got that split second to decide, does the guy have a firearm in his hand? Does he have a flashlight in his hand? Does he have a smartphone in his hand? And do you take the shot or not? And it's a very, very informative tool for the non-shooter to understand how little time that law enforcement officer has to make a decision.
Yeah, I remember one time I had to call 911. I was armed, and you know, I told them that, you know, I have a license and I'm armed, and the dispatcher told me, "Well, that's all right. When the police show up, just make sure they can see your hands, and you know, and everything will be in." So that's what I did, and there were no problems.
Yep, that's exactly the same reason why we tell people if you are driving, let's say you're driving at nighttime, you're driving in your car, and you get stopped for something, well, turn on the dome light of the car and keep your hands at 10 and 2 for that officer to see, because that's what they're worried about is where are your hands and what's in those hands, right?
Yes.
Yep. Well, Tom, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Okay. Yep. Tom from Detroit. He's one of the regulars that listens and calls, just like we have so many regulars. I wish I had read that email before, but I read it last night, and actually my wife and I were watching some movies last night, and so I was reading, I saw the email, and I was watching the movies, and I was like, oh man, I don't have time so I'll have to look at that later. And sure enough, I get a call on it. Should have taken the time to read the email and done the studying last night. So at any rate, let's see. We were talking about stances, okay? So there's four things that I was going to talk about, and I don't know if I'll have time. We'll see. But the stance, the grip, your sight alignment, and then your trigger control. So we were just starting on stance, okay? The isosceles stance is one that you see a lot where people are standing and they have their body perpendicular to the direction of the bullet, Okay, so let's say you're standing like 90 degrees to the flight of the bullet and looking at the target downrange, and you have both your hands out in front of you and your arms straight, and your arms and your shoulders together are creating an isosceles triangle because your arms are straight out, they're equal length and straight out, and then and two sides of a triangle that are equal make it an isosceles triangle, okay? And so what happens is that's called the isosceles stance. And it is a good basic stance. It also, though, people have to, you have to have your feet in the proper place. You have to have your body leaning over your knees a little bit and over your feet. So you're leaning forward and you've got your arms out straight and you're able to shoot. You don't have your head back like you're trying to get away from the gun, because that's not a good comfortable stance, and it's not a good strong stance. And that's one of the reasons that people came up with a modification of that called a Weaver stance. Okay, and the Weaver stance is where you have your legs probably about 45 degrees to the angle of flight, if you are the angle of shooting. If you are standing there and you're shooting, you've got your body and your feet 45 degrees angle to the flight path of the projectile, typically to the right if you're right-handed, or to the left if you're left-handed, okay? And so you, again, you have your feet, this is important, you have your feet about shoulder distance apart and your knees slightly bent, your weight over your feet and leaning slightly forward, okay? With a Weaver stance, though, because your body is twisted, you've got your, like, if I'm right-handed, so I'll say this, my left hand and on the gun is slightly bent, and my right arm is bent down farther. It actually forms almost like a tripod. And so if you're looking up stances, the Weaver stance is one that is, it also allows for your body to be in a better strong position to handle recoil. Because if you've got your legs like on the isosceles stance directly out from, you know, from your body and perpendicular to the flight of the bullet, then the recoil can tend to push you back. But if you have your legs staggered like that and your body is 45 degrees to the right or to the left, you're able to withstand the recoil better. Same thing is true if you have rifles with a lot of recoil and stuff like that. I realize this is not the easiest thing to talk about on the radio, but I'm trying to encourage you, look it up, the isosceles stance and the Weaver stance, so you can understand the different options you have. A lot of people have their feet tight together. They might be leaning forward, leaning back, and they're not setting their body proper to be able to withstand the recoil, to withstand an attack. And that actually is one of the reasons we practice the Weaver stance for defensive carry as well. So that's a good start. Next week, we'll also talk about grip and sight picture, and trigger control is especially important. We'll also talk about breathing and things like that. So I want to say a lot of politics today, a lot of outrage at Biden's comments about F-15s and nuclear weapons. What are you going to say? Oh, Joe. Well, I'm getting tired of the, oh, that's just Joe. He knows what he's saying, and he means it. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WHAM Talk 1600. I'll see you next week.